Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Raj Punjabi, head of identity content at HuffPost.
And I'm Noah Michelson, head of HuffPost Personal.
Welcome to Am I Doing It Wrong? The show that explores the all-too-human anxieties we have about trying to get our lives right. Okay, Noah, I have a profoundly personal question to ask you.
Okay.
Once again, are you peeing wrong?
So I don't know that I'm peeing wrong, but I am really pee shy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know this, but when you go somewhere like Yankee Stadium, a lot of times they just have troughs, literal
in
troughs.
In the men's room?
Yeah, in the men's room that you are peeing in.
So undignified.
You're shoulder to shoulder with strange men and your willies are out and you're just supposed to pee and I can't do it.
It's terrible.
So I don't know that I'm peeing wrong, but that doesn't feel right. What about you?
Yeah. I offer much sympathy for that. I don't know if I'm peeing wrong. I definitely ping too often. And I don't know if it's like a nerves anxiety thing or, you know, it's something else that I can possibly get in control. But thankfully, today we have with us Dr. Yaniv Larish from Fifth Avenue Urology.
Well, let's get peeing.
Okay, Dr. Larish, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, guys.
So excited to talk pee with you. We've covered poop, and here we are at pee.
Yep.
Let's start with, what the hell is pee, actually? Because I try to think about what it might be, and I don't know.
Yeah, same.
All right, so pee is really cool, says every urologist, right? So your kidneys see 1/5 of your entire bloodstream every minute, right? So every red blood cell in your body goes through the kidney every 5 minutes, every single one of them.
Wow.
And the kidney's role is to scavenge and scour and to remove toxins from the bloodstream. And if it was simple as just removing the toxins, we would be making tons of urine, tons of urine, because if the filter isn't all that great, more stuff comes out. So the kidney not only scours and scavenges and removes toxins, it then has to reclaim the water. And so that all that's coming out really is super concentrated, very salty fluid.
Okay.
And that's really what urine is. It's a very concentrated, salty solution with some toxins in it.
Okay.
Wow.
How often should we be peeing?
Yeah,
is there like a magic number?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there's no magic number.
Okay.
There's no normal. It doesn't work that way because if you are stranded in the Sahara Desert under the baking sun and 120 degrees heat, your kidneys are going to do everything possible to hold on to every drop of water that they can.
Right.
And so as you become more and more dehydrated and there's less free water circulating in your system, your kidney's going to make less urine or more concentrated urine, frankly. And so on the other extreme, if you're, say, a college-going frat, you know, guy or gal, and you're pounding those beers on a Saturday night.
So basically me. Yeah.
Yes, right. Raj.
No, you're a college.
I am a frat guy, girl.
For sure. So if you're sitting there and drinking tremendous amounts of volume, particularly of substances that are diuretics, meaning that they dilute the urine or poison the kidney to dilute the urine, you're going to make a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the question is not how often are you peeing? It's more, are you hydrated enough or overly hydrated? And what is the point at which everything is sort of normal?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, our bladders have really two roles. On the one hand, they're meant to work as a storage vessel. And so they need to fill, they need to hold it. You need to be able to not relieve yourself until it's socially acceptable, right?
Right.
And you should also not be transmitting pressures from the bladder north up to the kidneys. So in technical speak, we look at the three C's: capacity, meaning how much volume you can store; compliance, meaning is the bladder stretching without transmitting pressures to the kidney, because it shouldn't; and contractions, meaning the bladder should not be contracting, squeezing down when you're trying to store urine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay.
In the same token, right, just the other side of the coin, it also has to evacuate that urine really efficiently,
right,
when it's socially acceptable, right? And so the bladder then needs to empty completely and fully in one smooth go and contract and, by definition, increase pressure within the bladder, again, without transmitting pressures above. So it's a really complicated system,
mm-hmm.
But that's what our bladder needs to do. So whether or not you're peeing too much or too little is a good question, but I think the bigger question is, are you satisfying the three C's of capacity, compliance, and contractions,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time evacuating completely? And of course, the whole field of urology, as it pertains to voiding dysfunction, is around those topics. And right. So you can have derangements in capacity where you have a very small bladder. You can have derangements in compliance where the bladder is not stretchy. You have to think of the bladder as almost like a thin-walled water balloon.
Hmm.
So no matter how much fluid you put into that balloon needs to expand. If that balloon is not made out of stretchy material, if it's fibrotic, meaning it's scarred, it's going to be like trying to fill a water balloon made out of leather.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to expand. And so as you put more fluid into that tight leather sac, the pressure in the balloon is going to rise as opposed to just expand.
Wow, our bladders deserve a raise. They do a lot.
They do. And my question is I'm not going to say a normal person, but like an average person, are those three C's just happening involuntarily? Like we
Correct.
Shouldn't even have to think about it. Everything's just
Correct.
Working the way it should.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. It should just be working the way it should.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, most people have been peeing normally their whole life.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then something sort of tips them over the edge. And in some cases, there are people who don't pee normally their whole life. And there are a variety of reasons. The dysfunction that can happen, again, is around those three C's and then on the other side, the emptying portion of what the bladder needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we can actually tailor our therapies based on where the dysfunction is or where the disconnect is.
Right.
You know, the bladder needs to, in addition to just being a vessel that fills and empties, it also has to communicate really efficiently with the central nervous system, with mm-hmm. the spinal cord, and with the brain. There's a lot of complicated things going on in this machinery, right? We tend to simplify the bladder to being like, oh, I have to pee, I got to empty. But there's a lot of stuff going on in the background that needs to work efficiently for you to have a nice, happy life and not be bothered by your bladder.
Right.
Now, just real quick, I want to go back to the frequency of peeing. You mentioned diuretics and the word poison. Are diuretics bad for you? Because I think about coffee and tea is also a diuretic, right? Should we be limiting all that stuff for the sake of our bladder?
So that's a good question. You know, diuretics by definition are a poison to the kidney. Okay. Now I use the word poison in a very colloquial kind of sense, right? But if you think about it, the kidney should be able to hold on to water efficiently. And if you add a chemical, whether that's caffeine or alcohol or an actual diuretic pill,
right,
you are by definition inhibiting the kidney from doing its job, which is holding it to water. That's why you pee more.
Okay, stressing it out.
Yeah.
Got it.
How bad is it for us to hold our pee?
No, I think you're supposed to be able to hold your pee.
But you know, like let's say you had to pee and you hold it for 45 minutes because there isn't a rest stop and you're on a road trip. Like, is that doing damage to us?
And does that vary based on what genitalia you have?
Yeah.
Good question. Okay, so the bladder has a pretty large capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in adults, we're talking about anywhere between 400 milliliters and 600 milliliters. On average.
Okay.
Some people less, some people more, but that's a pretty good rule of thumb. The way I like to think of it is two cans of Coke.
Okay.
It's a pretty good volume. There is a point where if you go beyond the normal capacity of the bladder, you're stretching a muscle. just like a bicep or a quad or a delt, whatever it is in the gym, if you overstretch that muscle, it's going to have problems functioning and being able to contract. And so it's very common for people to say, you know, I held my pee. I really had to pee, but I was stuck in traffic and I couldn't get to a bathroom. And by the time I was really just at my wit's end, but when I finally got there, I peed. But my stream was so weak, I had to stand there for 5 minutes or sit there for 5 minutes trying to pee. And it really came out as a trickle. Well, that's because the muscle has been overstretched. Mm-hmm. You're almost like straining or spraining your bladder. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it takes time for that to recover. So I would say it's not normal to hold your pee. Remember, your bladder and your brain have been working in concert your whole life, right? So if it's telling you it's time to go, it's probably time to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are there abnormalities that can occur where people feel like they need to pee intensely, sometimes to the point where they're seeing stars and then go to pee and nothing comes out or very little comes out? Sure. Mm. But that's a neurological disconnect between what the brain and spinal cord are sensing and what the bladder is signaling and vice versa. You can have, there are people who really don't feel the urge to pee.
But when they go, it's like a healthy stream.
Or can't go at all. They don't feel the urge. They show up in the emergency room with 2.5 liters of urine in their bladder.
God.
So a bladder up to their chin, basically. And they go, yeah, it's been 2 days. I at first I wasn't paying attention. I really didn't feel the urge to go. I still don't feel the urge to go, but something's wrong. And we go, there's definitely something wrong here. Again, that's a disconnect between sensory, spinal cord and brain interactions with the bladder. Mm-hmm. So that all has to work normally for you to pee normally.
Right.
How would one resolve that kind of disconnect?
Again, it depends, right? So one of the things that I do a lot in my practice, I focus a lot on bladder and bowel dysfunction as it relates to multiple conditions. One of the things that we do for people who can't pee at all, we call that urinary retention, is we evaluate, is that because there's something blocking the stream?
Right.
In men, that's oftentimes enlarged prostates as they get older. In women, that's oftentimes prolapse or all sorts of vaginal vault defects. That needs to be fixed. And that's a mechanical obstructive problem, right? On the other hand, if you have a sensory deficit, if the brain and spinal cord are not communicating efficiently with the bladder and you're in what's called non-obstructive urinary retention, then you have to amplify the signal between the spinal cord and the brain and the bladder. And to do that, we actually have a little pacemaker for the bladder.
Wow.
We don't call it the pacemaker. I call it the gizmo because I feel like that's less, you know, scary for most people.
Yeah.
It's a little gizmo. We do, you guys are familiar with acupuncture, right?
Yeah, of course.
All right. So, and are you familiar with what a TENS unit is?
No.
All right. So at the physical therapist, they'll put some stickers on your muscle and it sends little electrical pulses and your muscles contract.
Right.
Think of the marriage of those two technologies together.
So cool.
We use a really fine acupuncture needle to access the nerve that governs the bladder. And then we connect it to a TENS unit that sits outside of the body. And we can send signals to sort of boost or amplify the signals that are coming from the brain, the spinal cord to the bladder. If you do really well with that, I call it a test drive. It's just for a couple of days to see if you do well. If you do well, then we bring you back and we do the exact same thing, but this time the TENS unit goes into your body. So it's an implant. It's really a pacemaker. It's made by the same companies that make pacemakers. And those pacemakers last for 20 years.
Whoa.
I guess on the other end of the spectrum, I've heard that you shouldn't just try to go pee before you leave the house, that you shouldn't just be peeing when you don't have to.
Right.
Tell us why that is.
Okay, so you don't remember this time in your life, but it definitely happened when you were around 2. Your mom or your dad or both told you, we're going to take off the diaper and you're only going to pee in the toilet. And when you get the urge to pee, you're going to hold it until you get to the toilet and then you're going to pee in the toilet or in the potty, right? Mm-hmm. And you've had accidents. And then over time, you sort of, that connection, that reflex between the brain, the spinal cord, and your bladder gets made and you can actually become continent and pee on demand,
right?
If you then fast forward to adulthood and you pee just to try, you can actually create a reflex where your brain says, well, every time I leave the house, I need to pee.
Wait, that's me. I have to pee every time I'm
We'll talk about you in a minute. We'll talk about you in a minute.
Help. Send help.
Yeah. No, so you can actually train your brain and spinal cord and bladder to pee when it's not necessary. Mm. And then it becomes a vicious cycle because then you live your whole life around where is the next bathroom? Where's the Starbucks? Where can I pull over?
I am a bit of a nervous peer. Mm-hmm. So this explains a lot.
Yeah. Explains everything. So
can you then retrain yourself the other way to not do that?
Yeah. So again, it depends why you're feeling the, if you're feeling an urge to pee, then there's something going on potentially. But right. If there's no urge and you're just trying to train yourself to not go just
to go
because you're going, yeah. Then yeah, you can break that. In the same way you broke it when you were two.
Right. We're going to see if Raj can do it.
I'm just an anxious person in general. And I don't love public restroom. So I'm like, try and empty it out.
I don't know many people who love public restrooms.
Yeah, that's true.
I was like, I'm so different. I hate public restrooms.
But maybe then we should talk about now being pee shy in general. Because sure. I don't like peeing at urinals. Like, I just get there. And if there are a bunch of people peeing around me, I just stand there.
It's a weird social construct.
And I have to wait for it to, like, turn on.
Yeah. So
what's going on there?
It's really cool. So what's happening is your bladder is contracting.
Yeah.
And what's supposed to happen is that your sphincter is supposed to relax. That's what allows mm-hmm. the pee to go. Mm-hmm. But that's controlled by a different portion of your nervous system. Mm. On top of that, your pelvic floor is also getting activated, particularly in anxiety-provoking situations, which in turn can cause sort of clamping down on the urethra. And so pee shyness, right, is really that. It's an interplay between your brain being anxious about the social situation and then all of the well-coordinated sort of ballet that needs to happen gets disrupted by the two guys to the left and to the right who are just chatting it up or whatever it is. I never understood how people chat with each other while peeing.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
This podcast is all about helping people do the things in their lives a little bit better. And sometimes that can mean simplifying your daily routine. Some people take a lot of supplements every day, mixing various pills and powders to get everything they need. But this isn't very efficient, and it's actually not always effective.
We first gave AG1 a try because we wanted to simplify our morning routines with easy habits. And we wanted a single solution that supports the entire body. Since I started drinking AG1 daily, I've felt energized. Not only does AG1 deliver my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more, it's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day.
I know with AG1, I'm giving my body high-quality nutrition. Every batch of AG1 goes through a rigorous testing process, and AG1 ingredients are sourced for absorption, potency, and nutrient density.
AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why we're excited to welcome them as a new partner.
If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/doingitwrong. Again, that's drinkag1.com/doingitwrong. Check it out.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This episode is sponsored by Storyworth.
There's some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. From hilarious to heartfelt, her stories always keep me entertained, and I love hearing about her life. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth.
StoryWorth helps you preserve precious moments and stories from your mom or mother figure for years to come.
So here's how it works. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. Like, what is one of your favorite holiday memories? Or, if you could see into the future, what would you want to find out?
StoryWorth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
Then you're going to be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know, or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself.
You know, Raj, I can't wait to have my mom start her StoryWorth journey. Having her stories and memories preserved forever is really an incredible gift. Not just for me and my brothers, but for my nephews, too.
I love that. And families love StoryWorth. That's why it has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago.
So give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll all cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, you can save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/dowrong. That's StoryWorth.com/dowrong to save $10 on your first purchase.
Welcome back to Am I Doing It Wrong?
So here's my question. Okay, I'm going to get very personal now.
Yay.
When I first moved to New York, I went on a very sexual exploration where I was like, I'm in New York. I can have all the sex I want. I'm going to try some different things. Mm-hmm. And a guy wanted me to pee on him. And I could not do it. I had to pee so badly. And no matter what I did. And so he was like, go try and run some warm water on your hand. Just go try and stand by the toilet and see if that triggers it. Nothing I did would make it happen. And I laughed. And I went across the street to McDonald's and I peed for like 10 minutes because I had to pee so badly, but it would never happen there. Are there ways to make yourself pee to pee, but your brain is like, nope, not doing it?
Yeah, I think, you know, most people associate peeing with pushing.
Yeah.
And in reality, peeing has to do with relaxation.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. Which is why there's such a difficult time in that situation. Usually what I tell folks is instead of trying to get the pee out, think about relaxing. The pee you've been doing your whole life, that's not new, right? Yeah. It's this new social construct or new situation that you're putting your bladder, brain, and spinal cord in that you need to sort of put aside and allow yourself to relax. Mm. Pushing is not the answer, ever.
Okay.
For normal voiding. Okay. There are people who can't contract their bladder at all, right? They have a spinal cord injury that, you know, God forbid, a spinal cord injury, serious one where the bladder is just flaccid.
Right.
Right. And we've tried a gizmo and it doesn't work. And they're left with this bladder that is acontractile or cannot contract. For those patients, for some people, voiding abdominally, meaning increasing your intra-abdominal pressure by pushing, is the way to pee. But that sort of takes out of the equation the relaxation of the pelvic floor and relaxing the sphincter. And so that's not normal pattern voiding.
Okay. So the key, you would say, when you're pee shy is just to relax a little bit.
Meditation.
The key to life
is
to relax.
Right.
And we're going to come back to golden showers because why wouldn't we?
Yes.
But the more pressing question right now is, how do we avoid UTIs?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really good question. So there's a lot of folklore out there. Okay, I'm gonna really dismantle some big folklore here.
I'm excited.
Good, that's what we're here for.
We have right. All the myths.
So,
yeah.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Wiping front to back as opposed to back to front. Everybody's told you always wipe front to back. Not based on anything.
What?
No data to suggest.
It's not based on like poop.
No
elements?
Data to suggest that there's any.
Has there
difference.
Just not been a study on them?
There is no data.
Oh my God.
Zero. Right. One.
Someone made it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peeing after sex?
No, come on.
No,
that's like my favorite adult thing to do.
And we salute you for doing that, but it's not going to prevent your UTI.
Oh, right? My God.
Because okay? The idea with that is that you're somehow
flushing
everything out.
It does sound ridiculous now that we say it out loud.
Not based on anything. Not based on any data. Vaginal douches, same thing.
Oh, we know that's bad.
No difference in UTI. So what do we know that prevents it?
Yeah.
In perimenopausal and postmenopausal women, the use of estrogen cream.
Okay.
Not oral estrogen, and it's a topical estrogen because it sort of rejuvenates the vaginal mucosa and adds a protective barrier. For men, not much out there.
Does hydration matter? What if we're really hydrated people? Does that improve our chances of not getting a UTI?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
But just in general for our urinary health, how much water should we be drinking? Does this make a big difference?
So how much water you drink depends on the environment that you're in.
Right.
Okay. Right. So if you're running a New York City marathon, or if you're stuck out in the Sahara Desert in the blistering heat, you're going to need more water to stay euvolemic, meaning neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because you lose a lot of fluid in sweat and in breath. And so pee is not the only way that you're going to lose fluid.
Right.
So if you're out there sweating bullets, you're going to need to drink more water. And on the other hand, if you're not moving, you're in a room that is not warm, you're not sweating, you're not breathing hard, then you're going to need less fluid. So I think one of the ways that we can gauge your hydration status is to look at the color of the pee, right?
Good. This is
so
good.
The darker the pee, the more concentrated it is. The lighter the pee, the less concentrated it is. How do we know that that's true? When you wake up in the morning after 8 hours of not drinking anything, your urine is going to be considerably darker than other times. And that's because you haven't drank anything and you've been sweating and doing all the breathing and doing all the normal things that people do. On the other hand, if you're, again, at your bar having a couple of beers and you're taking in a diuretic and drinking a considerable volume, then your urine is going to have no color. It'll be completely
clear. And we want that clear. That's a goal,
right?
You
want it lighter.
Okay.
Lighter. Okay. So lighter means that it's less concentrated. It's more dilute. I don't know that clear is a good metric that you want to strive for, but lighter in color is certainly where you want to be. Now, to complicate matters a little bit, there are going to be things that you eat and drink that are going to color the urine, right? So if you take, for example, a multivitamin, your urine's going to be dark.
It's crazy.
Right? But that's because your body is identifying many of the vitamins in that capsule as toxic, and it's eliminating them. Now, that's not really toxic. It's just way more than what your body needs, right? So I had a lecturer in medical school when I was a student, you know, many years ago, who used to say the most important thing that you can, the biggest benefit that one can get from taking a multivitamin is really expensive urine. He was a believer.
I believe it.
You get
it.
You get everything you need from diet and
what's
out there. Yeah. But that is something that can color the urine.
I'm going to tell you guys a little horror story.
Oh, great.
I used to be not the most hydrated person. And one night I woke up with debilitating cramps. Like, it was the worst pain I've ever experienced. And I went to the emergency room and I peed in a cup and it was dark. And they were like, you have a kidney stone.
Oh, no.
And I had a kidney stone and had to get surgery to have it removed. I was told that they likened it to childbirth pains, which, like, I was like, I'm never having children ever. Like, if I didn't want them before, I didn't want them now.
It was bad.
It was so crazy. But that dark urine tipped them off before they did any of the tests on me. And I mean, was it, this is a whole conversation, but like, what about our pee can alert us that something is wrong?
Great question.
That's a good, really good question. So when they took your pee, what they did is something called a urinalysis.
Yeah.
And they basically run a host of tests on that urine. It takes all of 2 minutes to do. It tells us about the pH of the urine, about the concentration of the urine, the presence of red blood cells, the presence of infection. And so when we find a young person with blood in the urine and concentrated urine, it's a pretty good predictor of having a stone. Now, if you're an older person and you have blood in the urine and say you have a smoking history, that may be a good clue that there's something more nefarious going on, that maybe there's a cancer somewhere going on. And so the presence of blood in the urine is abnormal, always.
Okay.
It needs to be investigated. Whether or not, and that's regardless of whether you see your urine being red in color.
Right.
Okay. So the urine can be crystal clear to your eye, but if they look at it under the microscope and they see red blood cells, that needs to be evaluated. I think that's probably what tipped them off to your problem. Yeah, kidney stones are miserable. And it's funny you should say the labor comparison. When I was a resident, we did a study on women on the labor floor giving birth without an epidural. Okay, so medication-free. And we compared them to women who were passing a kidney stone to men who were passing a kidney stone. Okay. Without question, the men passing the kidney stone had the highest pain scale.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Next in line were the women passing the stones, and third were actually the the people, the women delivering children. So, you know, kidney stones are incredibly painful.
Are there other things that we could see just with our naked eye in the toilet with our urine that we would be like, that's not good?
Yeah.
Like we should see a doctor.
So it depends, right? But your eyeballs are really good at taking in the world around you. But as urine detectors, they're so-so.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. But the presence of blood is a big one.
Yeah.
The presence of any sort of mucus or particulate should be concerning. Gravel or sand at the bottom of the toilet is actually, well, believe it or not.
Would that be a kidney stone?
So it's the beginning.
Okay.
It's the beginning. So for a kidney stone to develop, right, there's an interplay between the salt that's in the fluid and whether or not it's in solution or crystallizing. I'm taking you back to like high school chemistry.
Completely.
But to make it so that people don't turn off right now, we'll liken it to cooking pasta.
Okay.
So you put your pot of pasta on the stove and you warm it up and you pour some salt in. And the salt starts as a little pile of salt at the bottom of the pot. Then you give it two stirs and like magic, the water all just turns gray and then the water and then the salt disappears.
Right.
Right. The salt hasn't disappeared. It's just been forced into solution.
Right.
If you then cool down the water, the reverse will happen and the salt will precipitate out of solution, form a crystal, which is what you see back at the bottom of the pot. That's what's happening in the kidney, right? Is you have these salts or solutes within a fluid and they're in solution. And at some point, either because of a defect in pH or oversaturation with salt, those salts will precipitate out of solution, forming a crystal, which ultimately becomes a stone.
Okay.
Now, you can make tiny little stones that are so small that they don't cause any pain. So people tend to think that passing a kidney stone is painful because the stone is passing through and irritating things. Mm. It's actually not. Mm. What causes the pain is the stone gets stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Pressure builds up in the kidney. And that's what, exactly. That's
the pee is trying to come through and it
just hearing about it makes me want to jump out a window.
Exactly. So that pressure builds up in the kidney and that's what causes pain.
Yeah.
So if your stones are so small that they're not getting stuck in the ureter or in the tube that drains the kidney down to the bladder, then there's no backup, you'll be asymptomatic. You won't even know that you're passing anything. But if you then see little sand particulate in your toilet, that's a pretty good, you know, a pretty big red flag, as the kids say.
Yeah.
Right? That's a red flag.
Okay.
If you're passing a kidney stone, let's say you know that you have a kidney stone, one of the ways that we can tell if you've passed the kidney stone is we have you pee through a little sieve, through a little filter, and you can actually see a little BB come out, a little stone. Now, how big that stone is dependent on how big it is.
And how whether you can pass
it is. And whether or not you can pass it is sort of dependent on how big the ureter is and how big the stone is and what the disconnect is between those two.
When we're peeing, what is the best way we should be peeing? Earlier you said it was basically like you shouldn't be pushing. It should just happen on its own. But are there things, like when we did the poop episode, the doctor sort of walked us through like what you should and shouldn't do. The average person going to pee, what's the healthiest, best way to do that? Is there something we should be doing?
Yeah, so I think the most important thing is you should be relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And you will know if it's coming out easily, if it all comes out in one shot very quickly and then stops.
Yeah.
So we don't want to see hesitation before it comes out. We don't want to see a prolonged standing time where you're just sort of there because that sort of tells us that either the stream is weak. It tells us that the stream is weak. The question is why.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, we don't want to be dribbling after.
Right.
Yeah.
Or having the urge to pee 2 seconds after we peed. So it's not so much, am I doing it wrong? It's more, is there an issue And if you're not just peeing all in one shot in a relaxed way, then there's probably an issue.
Okay.
That can be dealt with.
We have heard that pee is sterile.
Of course.
You know, we've heard people have drank it. How sterile is pee?
Okay, so two separate questions. Sorry. There. Okay.
Like their own pee.
I'm not yucking anybody's yums.
No.
Yeah. Okay, but I don't understand why anybody would drink the pee. But if you're going to, understand that you're drinking concentrated salt and toxin.
Yeah.
Not a great idea. I wouldn't recommend it. If you're stuck in the Sahara and you have nothing else to drink, I would not drink that.
You wouldn't.
It will hasten your demise.
Right.
Interesting.
Okay.
So it's not sterile. Like, why? Where does that come from?
So that's the second part of your question was, is it sterile? The answer is it is sterile.
Okay.
Okay. Unless there are pathogens in it, which to the human eye, you're not going to know. That needs to be run on a petri dish. What's interesting is that in recent years, we've taken urine, put it on a petri dish, and nothing's grown out. And we said, it's sterile. There's nothing there.
Okay.
But if you then take that same urine and run it through a polymerase chain reaction or a PCR machine that amplifies DNA, right? So there shouldn't be any DNA in the urine. There's nothing there. It's acellular stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you amplify the DNA in there, it turns out there's tons of microorganisms there, just not enough to grow out on a petri dish.
Mm.
So, you know, sterility, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay. Can I just follow up that one?
Please do.
The myth about if you get stung by a jellyfish, pee on it, is that real?
I think that's a myth, but it makes sense.
Okay.
It makes sense because the pH of the urine will counterbalance some of the toxin, et cetera. Having said that, I think there's over-the-counter stuff that you don't have to.
Right.
Thank goodness.
I heard somewhere too that it just sort of like takes all those cells and moves them around and makes it hurt more.
Oh,
it
no.
It doesn't actually do what you want it to do.
Yeah, I'm not certain about that.
That episode of Friends really got in my head. Yeah.
Let's go back to golden showers.
Let's do it.
Are they quote unquote safe?
Yeah.
If you do want to pee on someone, are there things you should be worried about or thinking
should you
about?
Put on a full body condom or not?
Well, so it's interesting, right? If we think about it from a safe sex perspective, it's not safe, right? Mm. Because you may have some blood in the urine. You may have bacteria in the urine.
Mm-hmm.
You may have gonorrhea in the urine. You may have chlamydia in the urine.
Right.
All of those things are highly transmissible to the eyeball, for example, to the mouth. And so if you don't know, then you really should be practicing safe sex, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a challenge.
Right.
What if everyone's been tested thoroughly and you're in a monog relationship?
Whatever floats your boat.
All right.
Okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
What about peeing in the shower? I've read people saying that it's a really good idea. One, it saves water because you're not flushing the toilet. But number two, that you can actually like cure or prevent athlete's foot. Urine will somehow get rid of athlete's
foot.
Okay,
so I'm a big proponent of peeing in the shower to my wife's dismay.
Okay.
Okay.
But why is that?
I don't know. It just feels great.
Okay, but you're not saying there's a medical.
But my wife just hates when I do it.
Okay.
I don't know anything about the athlete's foot part. I'm just saying if you want to pee in the shower, pee in the shower.
Okay.
All right.
To wrap it all up, what would you say to our listeners, you know, if they want to be peeing as healthfully as possible, what are a couple tips or tricks you would say? What should they be thinking about on, an average day?
They should be thinking about nothing when they're peeing.
Okay.
Right? It should be blank zen.
Yep.
That's the golden rule. I think you want to be hydrated, but not overly hydrated, right? Everything has to be in moderation. Hydrated, but not overly hydrated. Not overdoing it with supplements if they're not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Being tuned in to your body is probably the most important part. So if you see that something has changed, I haven't woken up at night in 20 years to pee. And in the last 3 weeks, I'm waking up three times a night to pee and it's really disruptive. Hey, yeah, that's a big difference in baseline,
right?
Mm-hmm. You should not be waking up in the middle of the night to pee.
Hmm.
That's abnormal. So something is happening, right? And if you have changes to your body that you're attuned to, then getting an expert opinion and figuring out if there's an issue is a reasonable thing to do.
Interesting.
What are some of the ailments that are associated with peeing to, like getting up three or four times at night to pee?
Yeah. So, well, the biggest ailment is behavioral stuff, right?
Got
so if you're chugging a liter of Poland Spring water 2 minutes before you go to bed, in 3-4 hours, that's going to be filling up your bladder. And now what? Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we have to sort of, and this is part of the detective work when we talk to patients, is Well, when is the last time you're eating or drinking anything?
Yeah.
Okay, you're drinking 2 liters of water 2 minutes before you go to bed. That's the issue. Or I barely drink anything, but I do have 2 beers, you know, at 8 p.m. and I go to sleep at 10 and then I'm up all night peeing. Well, it's because you have a diuretic on board, mm-hmm. right? So I think that's sort of what we need to think about.
And if you're not,
then we have to talk about, are your bowels actually working normally? Mm-hmm. Okay, because the rectum and the bladder are governed by the same set of nerves.
Got it.
Okay, so dysfunction in one organ causes a reflex dysfunction in the other.
Got it.
So if you have spastic bladder, you can have spastic rectum. If you have spastic rectum, you can have spastic bladder, mm-hmm. or a contractile bladder, anywhere on that spectrum of functional issue. So number one is, are you pooping once a day, soft, smooth poop, coming all out, easy peasy, couple of wipes and you're done, right?
Yeah.
If you're pooping little rabbit pellets once a week, yeah, that's the reason your bladder is also misbehaving. Okay. It's because there's a distension in the rectum that's causing a problem. Poop, not my thing, right? That's why I went to the other side. But one of the clues that tells us that you're doing it wrong is if you're passing gas, if you're farting every time you pee.
Oh, interesting.
Because it means that you're – yeah, because think about it. The bladder needs to contract on its own. It's a muscle on its own, mm-hmm. not connected to anything else, right? So if you're farting – that means that you're using abdominal musculature, right? You're increasing the entire intra-abdominal pressure in order to squeeze on the bladder. So I tell people, if you find yourself farting in order to initiate a pee or in order to get the last third of your urine out, there's something going on that needs to be evaluated. Anyway, sorry about that.
No, that's super interesting.
Really interesting.
And that's the kind of thing where you'd say you might want to go see a doctor like you.
Correct. Yeah. As we talk about men who are getting older, big prostates, are not emptying their bladder completely. Mm-hmm. So if you have, again, back to that pot of water, right, and it's filled to the brim and you pee, but only halfway down the pot. And at this point, you feel like you're empty, but you're only halfway down. Remember, our bladder capacity is 400 ml, right? So if you've peed 200 ml, the amount of time that it takes to get back to that full pot is less than if you were completely empty.
Yeah.
Right? So in general, people make about 30 milliliters or a half a milliliter per kilogram per hour, right? So if you're a 60 kilogram person, you should be making about 30 milliliters of urine per hour, which means that in 10 hours, you'll have 300 milliliters, right?
Yeah.
That's in the euvolemic state. That's without hydration or dehydration. So if you then, that's just baseline.
Yep.
So then if you add or subtract, that's how you know sort of where you're at.
Okay.
From urological, is that the right word? Urological standpoint. You know, you see all these people on TikTok or other places where they're like, I'm drinking 2 gallons of water a day and it's like so good for me. Is that overworking your system or is drinking that much water okay?
And I just want to add that I've been told by multiple physicians that half your body weight in ounces is like a goal. Is that?
I think that it depends on what you're doing, right? Because if you're leaking urine out from your sweat or from your breath, then you have to drink more. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, then less. I think that overdoing it is never a good idea, right? So it's not that there's some medicinal benefit to drinking 2.5 gallons of water a day. That may be overdoing it. That means your whole life will be revolving around running to the bathroom.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? So I have patients who come and see me and they're like, I say to them, is your bladder nice to you? Right? That's how I always start my consult. Is your bladder being nice to you? And they go, what do you mean? I go, it's meant to be an open question, right? This is your moment to tell me about your bladder. So is it nice and not nice? Yeah, it's pretty nice. You go, okay, how often are you peeing? Every 25 minutes. I'm like, every 25 minutes?
Yeah.
Every hour? And I go, and sometimes they'll come in with a partner and I'll say, hey, partner, how often do you pee? And they say, I don't know. I pee in the morning. I pee when I get to work. I'll pee after lunch and then I'll pee in the evening. I pee 4 times a day. Mm-hmm. And they're dumbfounded. They're like, what? But I pee 25 times a day. How's that possible?
Right.
And then we have to sort of unpack what's going on. Mm-hmm. Is that an overhydration issue or is it something more nefarious that needs to be dealt with?
Wow.
I love that.
I know. I feel smarter.
I love episodes like this where we just, we bust some myths. Yeah. We learn some things. I feel.
And I'm not even nervous because I don't have to pee right now. Right. I thought I would have to pee this entire episode.
I was nervous when we had to hear about your
kidney stone. I have so many more details. I can't wait.
Thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome.
This has been amazing.
We love it. Thank you so much. Yeah.
It's time for Better in 5. These are your top 5 takeaways from this episode.
Number 1. There's no normal frequency for peeing. It depends on several factors, such as how much you've been drinking all day and how active you are.
Number 2, pee can be all different colors, but if you see blood, you should see a doctor immediately.
Definitely. Number 3, go when you have to go. Do not try to pee if you don't have to.
Number 4, sorry, there's actually no data that proves that wiping front to back or peeing after sex can prevent a UTI.
I'm still going to do both of those things. And number 5, the ideal way to pee is just to pee. You should be in a zen state where you're relaxed and not pushing.
Okay, Raj, so after all is said and done, have you been peeing wrong?
You know what? I actually don't think I've been peeing wrong because Dr.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Dr. LaRiche taught me that we all have different kinds of lifestyles and needs. And as long as something's not crazy and wild, you know, I can, neon green or whatever. It's okay that I pee frequently. And maybe knowing that will empower me and chill me out a little.
Yeah, that connection between the brain and the bladder was so interesting to hear about.
Yeah.
Because we don't think about that.
We don't, but it's common sense. It makes sense.
And I'm going to be thinking about that in terms of like my pee shyness.
Yeah.
Whereas I always think I get in the restroom and I just want to push it out.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work. Yeah. And so I like the idea of him telling us, just relax, just calm down and let your plumbing do the thing it wants to do.
I think, you know, not applying so much pressure on anything in life is just in general a good idea.
It is what you might say is the golden rule.
Yeah. The golden shower rule.
Oh, we knew it was going to come back at some point. Anyway, we would love to hear from you if you want to email us. We're still getting tons of great ideas for episodes, some of which will turn into episodes.
Yes, so thankful.
And we love the comments. So it's amidoingitwrong@huffpost.com. And until next time, as long as there are things to get wrong, we're going to be right here to help you do them better.
Pee happy.
Do you have something you think you're doing wrong? Email us at amidoingitwrong@huffpost.com and let us know.